Welcome to what we hopefully will be our last ADHD Lockdown Diaries podcast, as long as there's no second spike. As we in Britain prepare for our non-essential shops to open on Monday, the 15th of June, as well as our zoos and our theme parks and our drive-in cinemas, although nobody knows where to find such things in the UK. We also reach across the channel to touch elbows in Switzerland and hear from Clarissa Vorfeldt about how they are almost back to normal, something which hopefully will make us feel hopeful about the light at the end of the tunnel. Finally, in the light of the tumultuous events across the world with the Black Lives Matter movement, we are delighted to welcome onto our show our guest, Dr. Jude Smith-Rochelli, co-founder and CEO of Abundant Sun, a cultural transformation agency, who joined us on an earlier podcast and is going to talk about what needs to be done to capitalize on the momentum of this moment and also the need for more diversity and inclusion as we go forward to the new normal. My name is Emma Marnie.
And my name is Clarissa Vorfeldt, and welcome to Switzerland, where all 8 million residents are now going about our business almost as if back to normal. Who have you got home with you today, Emma?
Well, I still have my husband working from home as per the guidelines, although his company has rented a flat so that they can gather together the directors somewhere. And I've also got my twin 19-year-old children and my elder son, who is still just finishing his university work. How about you?
I'm at home with our daughter, Cecilia, who's 21. She's just returned from Baltimore in the US, where she has finished 4 years of college at Johns Hopkins University. And it all ended with a rather sort of sad little online graduation ceremony here at home, which we watched on TV, rather than the sort of extravaganza we had planned for her on site. And our son left us on Friday. He flew back to Rotterdam from a deserted Geneva airport where he studies, and not at the airport, but in Rotterdam. He's gone back to study in the university library and prepare for his exams. And so he is having to get up early to reserve one of the strictly limited places in the university library. And my husband is here in Geneva, not at home anymore, now back to normal in his office. And he says to him, the lockdown is starting to seem like a distant memory.
Oh, wow. Well, we look forward to that. Because in the first 25 working days of lockdown, we documented daily in earlier podcasts. And we always mentioned that Switzerland was 8 days ahead of us in going into lockdown. But that's not the same as coming out, is it? I mean, in Switzerland, you've got far more freedoms. That protest your daughter attended, for example, was legal because apparently groups, parties, weddings can be held up to 300 with up to 300 people. Is that right?
Yes, I feel you should say that with 300 people, because it's quite something. Yes, our daughter last night went to a Black Lives Matter march in Geneva, and it was very well organised with all the demonstrators divided into groups of 300 people, which is now the maximum limit for gatherings outside. So that does mean that weddings can go ahead, as you say, funerals, family gatherings. And I think I may not be quite right about outside or inside. You may well be able to have 300 people inside. So you can see that things are really opening up here. At the end of May, we were restricted to groups of 30. And now all of a sudden it's jumped to 300. And that is a pretty big party.
Yeah, definitely. And also all your religious services are operating as normal, aren't they? Whereas our churches are still closed. Although apparently they're going to be open from Monday for private reflective prayer only, rather than proper services. And finally, the religious community argued that retail therapy with shops opening should not be given more weight than spiritual ones. And that's how they managed to actually finally get the government to listen.
Well, I quite agree. I mean, in the same way that pubs seem to get priority over primary schools when it comes to reopening, I find that also very interesting. Religious practice here in Switzerland has resumed since May the 28th. So church services are back to normal. And I saw on the front page of my newspaper pictures of the mosque in Geneva where people are able to pray, but at a distance, as a sort of meter and a half distance between each person praying.
So you've got a meter and a half and we've got 2 meters. And considering how much space there is in these large churches and how little the congregation is, they could have organised this social distancing even earlier, in my view.
Yeah, they could have.
So we're both trained teachers. What's going on with schools in Switzerland? As it's all a bit of a mess over here. Have all the schools really been open since May the 11th? And or is this secondary and not at secondary and primary schools? Schools are real hot potato at the moment in the UK. The government's now saying that even primary kids may not all be back in school before September. And the main teaching union, NEU, is advising us teachers not to go back until schools are safe, whatever that means.
Yes, well, the answer to the question about schools in Switzerland is that it varies because Switzerland is a federal country. Like the US, it's made up of a federal government and then 27 states, cantons, and then lots of small local councils. And, you know, politically, it's very sort of important to the Swiss that the federal government was running the coronavirus response. And now they've handed over power, which is very sort of important for the Swiss identity, back to the individual cantons to decide how they are going to reintroduce schooling. So we're now looking at a variety of attitudes in the German-speaking part, where they have always been keen to bring back the economy, to get everything rolling again as fast as possible. All the schools are back, primary right up to secondary, full-time every day of the week. Life is back to normal in education there. Here in the French-speaking part, it does vary. So you have primary schools running as normal in almost all the French-speaking cantons, but secondary schools are slowly moving from alternate day schooling to every day, and that's happening over these next weeks. So some schools still are going Monday, Wednesday, Friday, others Tuesday, Thursdays. And finally, the Swiss version of A-levels, as in the UK, is being replaced by teacher assessment and grading. So it's a sort of it's a varying approach, possibly a bit like Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and England. It sort of slightly varies depending on where you are.
Okay. And what about public transport? Because we're being advised to wear face masks on public transport, which wasn't in place before, presumably, because we had a shortage of PPE. But right now we're being asked to do it. And I was given a face mask and a squirt of hand sanitizer at Clapham Junction train station last week. Is that happening in Switzerland?
No, it isn't actually. I mean, there's no government mandatory mask wearing. So no face masks on buses, tubes or trains. Even the buses that take the children to and from the school, which are jam-packed, do not require the wearing of face masks. So I think it is far less stringent. I mean, we have very low numbers now. We're now in the not quite single figures, but we're now in the very, very low numbers of fatalities. And I think that's given the country confidence to allow everyone to go out and about without wearing masks.
Interesting, because there must be some science in that as well. The big excitement here is when pubs and restaurants are going to open, because there was a rumour that pubs with beer gardens would be allowed to open on June the 22nd next week. But that seems to be just a rumour after all. And at the moment, along with hairdressers and gyms, pubs will open on July the 4th.
Okay, so since June the 6th, restaurants have been open to up to 30 people. So the first step for restaurants was tables with a maximum of 4 people. But I knew someone who organised a restaurant get together with 12 people. And I asked, how could you possibly do that? She said, oh, we were 3 groups of 4. And then we just got up and moved between tables, you know, as in between their courses. So that was a way of getting around it.
Ah, good. I'm glad to hear there's a little bit of naughtiness going on in Switzerland, because you're always so law-abiding. But what about borders? Because obviously you've got borders with France, Austria, Germany and Italy. And of course, Italy was where most of the coronavirus came from. So what's been happening with your borders?
Yeah, so borders is an interesting thing if you live here, because in England, obviously in Britain, borders are just not an issue because it's an island. But borders with neighbouring countries, as you say, Germany, Austria, France and Italy, will reopen on Monday, June the 15th. And they've been tightly closed since March the 13th. So it doesn't sound too bad to someone listening in. But if you remember that 12% of the workforce in Geneva, 12% comes in from neighbouring France every day by car or bus or train, that has had the most colossal impact on the town of Geneva, on the obviously on the companies. They've had to find solutions to that, because a lot of the normal functioning of the hospitals and the safety services, the ambulances and the fire services, were employing French workers.
Ah, interesting. And what about airports? Because you mentioned you waved your son off at Geneva Airport this week, didn't you? So what was that like?
So the airport was deserted, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning. I've never seen it like that. There are only about six, 10, 12 flights a day, but really very few. So I think that's all going to change very soon.
And have you heard that we've introduced a quarantine rule since a couple of days ago on Monday, that anyone coming into the country has to now quarantine for 2 weeks in the UK and give up your details? It's very unpopular with the travel industry, who feel it's kind of nuts to do it so late. Sort of shutting the stable door before it's bolted. So we reckon it will be lifted soon.
Right. Yes, that sounds absolutely mad. And I gather Tom Cruise arrived on Sunday in the UK because he didn't want to have to, he didn't want to have to abide by the new rules to film his Mission Impossible 7 movie. So he'll maybe be commuting by helicopter.
Well, definitely better than wearing a mask on public transport. Now, last but not least, how is the big talk of an economic recession going in Switzerland? Because we've had a small bit of good news today, because the government lifted the ban on house sales during the pandemic on May the 13th. And apparently there's been 137% rebound in house sales.
Oh, that's great news. And it just shows that when people are able to get out, they are going to, I think, go mad and shop and hopefully pull everything as fast back to normal as they possibly can. I mean, all those people cooped up in lockdown couldn't wait to get something better when it lifted. And we've had an interesting statistic in this week, thanks to more focus and flexibility. So more focus on your work, maybe less outside distraction or office politics, and more flexibility in working. Productivity per worker rose by 16% during the lockdown, according to a study by the Swiss Trade Association. I mean, you may ask, why on earth is that? But reasons include the fact that employees were able to focus on the most essential tasks in their workload, and with many avoiding those daily commutes, they were able to streamline work habits at home.
Very interesting, and I hope that they continue that idea. Remember Matt of Eco Hustler, who came on an earlier podcast, and his great idea of maybe taking a four-day week and working from home for the fifth, and then reducing pollution from commuting by a fifth, because we've been told to avoid public transport if possible. And there was a bit of news today saying they're estimating a further more cars on the road, which I really hope there won't be.
Oh, I hope there won't be. I was so enthused by Matt's idea of, as you say, the four-day week with one day at home and what it could do to the environment. So to listen to what you've just said about everyone being encouraged to go into their cars is a disaster.
Yeah, well, there's also, of course, bicycles and walking. So let's hope that there's a bit more of that going to go on.
Yeah. Well, what else have you been up to in the interim?
Oh, well, I've finished my book. Better Late Than Never, which is Understand, Survive and Thrive After a Midlife Diagnosis of ADHD, which is obviously why I called it the ADHD Lockdown Diaries. That's going to be published by Trigger Books on Super Thursday, they're calling it, October the 1st. Mm-hmm. So what about you?
Well, I suppose that the quick summary for me is I have a YouTube channel, and talking about Black Lives Matter, it's had an impact on me in a very small way that the people I feature on my YouTube channel, which is always a sort of small biographies, five-minute biographies about famous people, they've mostly been European men, I realise. Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein, Michael Faraday, Vincent Van Gogh, you name it, white European men. And I now realise, particularly also in conversation with my daughter, that shifting focus onto women, women that we should know about, not just the women from that film Hidden Figures, you know, the women who worked on the NASA project without ever being noticed, or Rosalind Franklin, who was so important in the discovery of DNA but never got recognised. There are so many women, and particularly Black women, African-American women, people from ethnic minorities who've been overlooked in the history books, that has encouraged me now to focus on them rather than more David Livingstones and Napoleons.
So what kind of subjects are you looking for in your upcoming videos to include?
Well, I mean, one of the popular ones who's obviously very well known to school children in Britain today is Mary Seacole, who was working in the Crimean War, always largely overlooked by history books because she was a British Jamaican nurse who worked behind enemy lines treating patients with a combination of her nursing skills and also her herbal remedies, because obviously Florence Nightingale was the big story. There's also Harriet Tubman, who will be well known to any American, an abolitionist and a political activist in the US in 1900. She was born into slavery, she escaped, and then rescued enslaved people for the rest of her life. I've already made a film about Rosa Parks, who's obviously very well known. And then Sarah Good, I like the her story. She was the first African-American woman to receive a US patent in 1885 for her invention of a folding cabinet bed, which is a sort of desk during the day and turned into a bed at night. So there's plenty of material there.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I really look forward to seeing those. And this is probably a good time to introduce our guest, Jude Rochelli, or Dr. Jude, as we like to call her. And she's going to talk about how the lockdown is affecting her in the States, and also how she sees the Black Lives Matter movement creating meaningful change going forward. So welcome, Dr. Jude.
Thank you, Emma.
So, how are things lockdown-wise in the States?
Well, I'm sitting from Burlington, Vermont, and we are gradually reopening things. It was really nice to be on our church street at the weekend with shops open again and some pedestrian traffic in the pedestrian precincts. But we're still wearing face masks when we go out. That's just a matter of course, if you're still going to supermarkets or into shops, anywhere inside. So that's the new normal.
And have you got kind of limits on gatherings or anything like that?
Yeah, we still do. I mean, I was seeing that you can have quite a large number of people together. We're not at all observing anything like that. We're still, only two nights ago we went to a friend's home and it was the first time they'd let anybody in their house for 3 months, and we were all a little bit nervous, but we sat there with our masks on inside their house and had a nice socially distant al fresco evening in the back garden, sitting at a distance from one another. So we're not doing any hugging.
And do you feel that do you feel it's kind of been handled quite well as a public health issue?
In Vermont in particular, which is one of the reasons why we've chosen to have this as our Abundant Sun US home, people have been very conscientious, putting the good of the people in front of individual needs. So there's been, I think overall, you know, a really good observance of public health and safety requirements in order to flatten the curve.
And what do you think about nationally with Trump's kind of rhetoric around it?
What I see is the wearing of masks in a wider context, and to a certain degree here, but maybe not as prevalent, has become a political party symbol.
Oh, that is interesting. And that,
that
probably leads us on quite neatly to some of the protests that have been going on, which are now global, as you know. And what you feel has come out of them, if anything, from a, because we talked about silver linings, didn't we, in our first podcast, and whether you feel there's any positive that's come out of all of this kind of venting that's been going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is some people are venting, but I think there's more, it's got more depth to it than just that, you know. A vent is a sort of emotional tirade and something quite spontaneous and, you know, maybe sometimes uncontrolled. And there will always be elements of that whenever you have one or two people together in a space. But I think this moment in time is, it's a crisis of an existential proportion for humanity.
And what do you hope might come through it as a transformative period?
One is that this is a moment of, if we are allowing it to be, an opportunity to be more empathetic, to be more observant and sensitive to the experiences of other people and the realities that they live every single day. And when I say that, I say, you know, for all of us. But the issue of systemic racism is just so profoundly, deeply embedded into societies and into the psyche of people. And, you know, I'm hoping that this moment will really give us an opportunity to look more closely at how we have been failing, particularly on issues of racial oppression. So that's one piece. I also hope that in being able to do that, we can, the silver lining that we can get to is that people have to hear one another's points of view, that we have to listen to and appreciate one another's heritage. I would say that a majority of us as human beings are not anarchists. We are not violent people. I'm sad that a lot of the narrative is hijacked by some of that behavior, which then makes it very difficult to have a conversation that's been very difficult to have.
Yeah.
That's wrong. So I really hope that we can slow it down and begin to think more critically, more rationally, more responsibly about issues that are destabilizing the world and that are threatening the health and the safety and security of all of us.
And by that, do you mean, to a certain extent, how the Black and minority ethnic communities have been harder hit by something which they still haven't really worked out why, the coronavirus, or are you thinking of something a bit wider?
Oh, that and some, right? Because what we've had when we first started speaking in April with our ADH lockdown diaries, you know, we just had coronavirus to discuss. It's been very clear from the point of view of the data that I've learned a new acronym during lockdown. It's BIPOC, What's BIPOC? It's Black Indigenous People of Color. And when you look at the hard data around health equity or inequity, people who are Black and Indigenous people of color are being affected in significantly greater amounts with COVID, just alone as a standalone. We have been very good in Vermont, practicing our physical distancing. We've been very clear that this isn't social distancing. You know, in many communities, we just need to stay physically separate, but socially connected. And just last week, and we know we only had about 53 or 54 deaths in Vermont throughout this whole episode. And last week we had a spike of 36 cases, not deaths, but cases in the state. 34 of them are just a mile up the road from where I'm sitting in a town called Winooski, where we have a majority of refugees who live in Winooski, who are not native English speakers. And 34 people in that community have been impacted by the virus, half of which are children. We haven't heard many instances of that, but now the children are being hit. And the reason why is because we didn't have enough translation services available to them for them to understand what was going on around them and what they needed to do. So we have a conflation of COVID and racial inadequacy, cultural and linguistic inadequacy.
And that's the kind of issues that you think are sort of going under the radar at the moment, that hopefully what's going on at the moment might bring to the fore.
Right. And that's a systemic issue, right? And it's not as though we don't have wonderfully well-meaning people in Vermont. I think we've got a phenomenal government. I think we've got phenomenal citizens, but it's just a reflection that to say one thing is one thing, but to do something is something quite different. And unfortunately, we're seeing outcomes that are still quite desperate and poor. So when I say what I said earlier, it is, yes, a COVID-related issue, but when we're looking at how the COVID story is playing itself out, we are able to see very clear examples of racial oppression and inequity and in disproportionate numbers.
And do you feel quite hopeful about the fact that the young people seem to be very particularly mobilized by what's going on at the moment? And we're going to be talking a little bit later about Clarissa's daughter who went yesterday in Geneva to a protest.
Yeah. I'm not that hopeful. I think it's very good. It's an awakening. We chose to bring our daughters here who are of mixed heritage to the US because they were born and raised in the UK and they didn't really understand issues of race. We came in very, white, upper middle class environments, education, opportunities. And as long as you're there and we're all together and we're all friends, everything's fine. But I knew fundamentally that they were missing a bigger picture, which is why I chose 5 years to bring them here to go through their high school education. And it was more important to have the informal education than the education. I mean, both equally, but the informal is proving to be quite extraordinary now. So I'm very happy that they have awakened. I'm very sad that it's still having to happen. I don't know that it ends. I remember while I was still in the UK around 2012 or 13, being part of a campaign in Bristol, which was End Racism This Generation. And I remember going, how? Like this, I get the slogan, everybody, but can we be realistic? You're talking about something that has existed since time immemorial. How are we going to end it this generation? I'm happy to talk, and have a conversation, but I think we're being unrealistic. And quite honestly, I don't believe that it's a thing that will ever end. I think that we have to do better. I don't think it will ever go away, but I think we have to pay better attention and make it a lot less horrible than it is And if we can make it go away, phenomenal. That's wonderful. As so far, I mean, I don't even know how COVID's going to freaking go away now. You know, like, when is that ever going to be clear? When is it going to be safe to go out again? So yes, I am. I'm happy that the young children, no, I don't want to say young children, I'm sorry, that the younger generation is becoming active. I just want them to do it in the right way, because we've had a generation prior to that have done the same thing, that have created the structures that have inadvertently continued to perpetuate the things against which they had been protesting. That's the danger.
By that, can you be a bit more specific? What are those structures?
Well, so the thoughts that I've been having most recently is, you know, looking at economics, looking at politics, there's game theory going on here, right? And I just feel that we have to figure out what that is. I don't have the answers right now. This is all very, very fresh in my mind. So, you know, I've been thinking about it like a game of chess. And I want to make a move. And my move is, I'm going to, you know, go onto the streets of Bristol or go onto the, and it's right. And it is good and right for people's voices to be heard. We have democratic societies that should allow that to be done in a peaceful way. My critical look at it is the choice of that behavior a false choice? Is the choice of that behavior a part of a wider game theory where that move is an anticipated move? It's an encouraged move. It's a desired move for the system that's in control that is protecting itself. So that's what I'm trying to understand. If we make this move today or this weekend, who's five steps ahead?
Okay. Very interesting. And Clarissa, do you want to add anything before we let Dr. Jude go?
Well, if Dr. Jude has just a couple of minutes, because I'm really very interested and sort of privileged to hear such a sort of meaningful observation of what's going on, because it's very bewildering. I should say that the march that my daughter went on here in Geneva for Black Lives Matter last night was, apart from anything, very well organised, authorised by the authorities, and was a lesser protest. It was a peaceful, she said it had a terrific sort of emotional punch, because there were a lot of people walking peacefully in protest, but it wasn't a violent protest. Mm-hmm. So that was meaningful for her. I think it impacted her, and to see how many people there are in Geneva who come out on a rainy night. So that was one small thing. But the thing I wanted to ask you about, which I just, I think I want to hear you say I'm hopeful, because, you know, I mean, in my adult life, I've seen pictures similar to what we saw with George Floyd. I've seen pictures like that before. My daughter in Baltimore was obviously exposed to the demonstrations after a similar thing happened in that city. But my question is, how can you be hopeful? I sort of think, God, it's like with the gun crime. I think I've seen this before, and everyone gets very upset, and then everyone slumps back into their positions. And it would be wonderful if something very dramatic came out of this. And, mm-hmm. and what do you think that could be?
Well, I feel that we need, listen, we're in the crisis of leadership right now.
Oh, correct.
On a global level. And
well, that
because,
is true.
Right. And because we have a real absence of leadership, particularly coming from a US point of view, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have all sorts of other sovereign entities taking up this space. There have been lots of discussions about institutions like the United Nations being past their sell by date. You know, they were great when they were constructed after World War II. They did a great job of trying to pull the world together on a global level with a collaborative essence. But it's bureaucratic, it's clunky, it's ineffective. So, you know, even that is an institution we've got to rethink, because we don't have that to even support where we need to go. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm hopeful that we can do the work. But what I'm not hopeful of is that it's going to be a turnaround in 2 months, mm-hmm. right? And I don't want to see constant reactionary, you know, oh my God, we got to solve this today. And, you know, we need to slow down and really take the time and look at this very, very closely, and to actually allow ourselves to feel the pain. Because I think we've been trying not to feel the pain, all of us. And we can't get it. We can't, there's no hope if we don't do that together. Thank you both for the invitation. Have a lovely rest of your day.
And thank you so much.
Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.